This is a special edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In this documentary report, we're going to look at the controversial Texas state-supported living centers. Texas runs 13 state-supported living centers, more than any other state. This one is in San Antonio on South New Braunfels. Ralph A. Henry is the director, and on this morning, he's giving me a tour.
We're going to be heading over to building home 670 Daisy Lane, which is a residence for many of our ladies.
San Antonio Living Center sits on 40 acres and houses 235 residents. In the state system, there are 3,650 residents.
Are you guys still transitioning
to
your
program? Programming. Hi, welcome to 670. I'm Juana de León.
On the tour, Henry takes me into multiple buildings where the residents are living and looked after by the staff members. Here, the staffers are helping the residents get their day started. They're assisting them with walking and gently talking to them and encouraging them.
We provide 24-hour residential care for individuals who have a primary diagnosis of an intellectual or developmental disability. Many of our residents also have a medically fragile condition and or a mental illness as well.
Cecilia Cavuto is the communications director for the Texas Department of Aging and Disability Services, also known as DADS, which runs these state-supported living centers.
All of the state-supported living centers provide complete total care for the residents. So that includes medical care, dental care, dietary needs, mobility needs, communication, speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, as well as the normal day-to-day activities.
Hey guys, happy day. We're gonna keep moving.
Back on the tour, the buildings have a vintage institutional look to them. The campus was originally the Texas State Tuberculosis Hospital, which opened in 1953. But despite the age of the buildings, Henry says they have the most modern equipment, including a dental clinic.
We're going to now be approaching the dental clinic. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, guys. Sorry to bother you. Dr. Kouklaris.
Dr. Alvitus Kouklaris is the resident dentist.
What we have the modern equipment. We have three dental chairs, and each set up for each for the patient. All the dental treatment that they need, we try to do in-house.
There's also a busy vocational center on the grounds. Patrick Haas is a vocational counselor.
This is one of our training areas.
How's everybody?
Here, many of the residents are keeping busy and have a chance to earn a little money by working. This morning, some are putting rosaries into individual bags for oblate missions. Some are counting out hand towels, which will be used at Bill Miller restaurants, and others are sorting out yellow plastic parts for sprinklers.
We try to break down every job into some task that somebody can perform.
On the surface, the San Antonio State Supported Living Center looks to be a well-run facility with a caring staff that is meeting the challenging needs of their medically fragile and intellectually disabled residents. However, that's not what the experts see.
We have a lot of individuals who are our most vulnerable and who need our most care and are not getting it at all.
Beth Mitchell is an attorney for Disability Rights Texas, a nonprofit that advocates for the disabled. For the last 5 years, the 13 Texas state-supported living centers have been routinely inspected and closely monitored by the U.S. Department of Justice. These monitors have found the conditions at the centers to be woefully substandard and the care that they provide to be unacceptable, and there are continued problems with abuse and neglect of the residents.
Right now, most of these facilities are only at 30% of that compliance. And a lot of those are more about medical care, not pure abuse. You know, there is a provision for abuse and neglect, but a lot of those are just general medical care. Are they getting proper psychiatric treatment? Are they getting proper psychological care? Proper dental care.
Mitchell pulls out her laptop and calls up a graphic analysis of the DOJ monitor's reports for the San Antonio Center. A green or orange box means the center is meeting that benchmark. A pink box means they are out of compliance, and there are lots of big sections of pure pink.
Physical and occupational therapy, not in compliance. Dental services, so you had seen their dental area, it's not in compliance. So you saw it, you thought it looked great, But in terms of what care they're getting from that dental area, they're not getting it. So, you know, it says adequate and timely routine and emergency dental care and treatment. They're not in compliance.
These baseline compliance benchmarks of care were agreed to by Texas after being sued by the U.S. Department of Justice in 2009. The DOJ investigated and found that the Texas state-supported living centers were so inadequate that they were violating the rights of the people there. At the time, the facilities were called Texas State Schools, a misnomer because there was no schooling happening. In fact, just the opposite. The facilities were called out for rampant abuse and deadly neglect. It was so bad that Texas didn't even fight the suit and quickly agreed to a settlement.
Okay. Ms. Morales, would you just take us from the top and tell us about the agreement?
Sure.
In a May 22, 2009 hearing before the State Senate Committee on Health and Human Services, David Morales of the Texas Attorney General's Office explained to the lawmakers that they really had no options.
Just to be clear, the Department of Justice had very defined issues that it had with the state schools and the way they were performing. It was our task to address those, to make sure that Department of Justice was satisfied with the way that the department proposed to proceed and improve their services to these residents. And with the settlement agreement, the Department of Justice has said that what is in the settlement agreement passes muster with them.
The agreement was passed, and Governor Rick Perry signed the bill that brought the settlement into law.
This marks a substantial milestone in our state's approach to caring for some of our most vulnerable citizens. Whether these folks live in our state facilities or in therapeutic community settings, we're all obligated to show that basic human decency for those individuals so that they can live and learn and grow. And as you're very aware, our current system had some serious shortcomings. They were exposed, and those in our care, in some very inexcusable ways. Like you, I was disturbed enough by the discovery of those failings to declare their correction an emergency issue at the start of this 81st legislative session that we just concluded. And I'm proud that the legislature addressed them.
The settlement agreement was for 5 years, which is now up. But Cavuto of the Department of Aging and Disability Services says that doesn't mean that the agreement is now over.
It actually was not a 5-year settlement. The date I believe you're referring to is a June 2014 date. That date is actually just when the monitors are going to make their first progress report to the court, but it does not end the settlement agreement, and it was never intended to.
But lawmakers at the time of the settlement's negotiation and agreement were repeatedly assured that this would not be an ongoing issue.
The term of the agreement is for, we anticipate, will be 5 years. There will be a report by the monitor at year 4 to tell us where we are and whether we anticipate anything going beyond 5 years. But one of the key components on this that my office wanted to make sure, and what ended up in the settlement agreement, was that we have a fixed time that we know that the state needs to get this done and the Department of Justice anticipates it will get done. We accomplished that.
Nevertheless, it's been 5 years since the settlement, and Texas has proved that in that time, it was unable to meet the basic standards of care. Also, currently, Texas is trying to renegotiate that settlement agreement, dealing with the monitoring and the compliance benchmarks. But the big question is, what happens next? Will the centers be allowed to continue to operate while providing substandard and even dangerous care? Recently, the Texas Sunset Commission announced recommendations to close 6 of the Texas state-supported living centers, but not because of quality of care issues, but because of how expensive the system has gotten to be for Texas. You're listening to a special documentary report on the Texas state-supported living centers produced by Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. To hear Ashley Yates talk about her brother Sean, he certainly sounded like one of a kind.
We'd all be asleep. He called 911 and said that officers were down and SWAT team members were down and everybody in his family had been killed and shot. We get woke up with helicopters and SWAT team at our doors. And it was Sean under the bed playing on the phone. He was a character. And half the stuff he did, I don't know how he did it or why he did it.
Sean was diagnosed with severe Asperger's, a high-functioning form of autism, and attention deficit disorder. Part of his behavioral issues was a compulsion to run away. Despite her family's best efforts to keep Sean secure in their Oar City home in East Texas, Ashley said it was no use. Her brother was an escape artist.
He crawled through the air vents on the floor and got out through the ductwork of the house. We actually lived in a trailer kind of like this one growing up. In the middle bedroom was Sean's. We had to board up the window, of course, so he couldn't get out the window. But he put his bed up against the door and knocked a hole in the side of the trailer wall and got out.
And when Sean saw an opportunity to borrow a car or a truck or a boat, he would take it.
Multiple vehicles. It's like my mom went and paid insurance one day. She just drove up. Sean was in the truck with her and turned her back to hand the money right there. And I mean, she wasn't from me to you from the truck. And she turned around and looked, and Sean's flying down 271.
Ashley said Sean would never go far, and he was never missing for more than 18 hours. The situation with Sean was chaotic but manageable until one day in 2003.
He took a logging truck, because we lived right down the road from a logging company. He took a logging truck with logs on it. The keys were ignition, drove it about 30 miles to Marshall. He kind of learned how to change some gears of an 18-wheeler by watching my dad. And he made it 30 miles until they pulled him over, and they held him in the county jail and then put him in Russ County Hospital for 2 weeks until Corpus Christi came available.
A judge had ordered that Sean be placed in a lockdown facility that could treat him. He was sent to the Corpus Christi State Supported Living Center, although at the time it was called the Corpus Christi State School. And Sean continued his series of great escapes. And to counter Sean's tendency to run off, he was assigned one-on-one 24-hour staff oversight. But Ashley and her family wanted to get Sean closer to home.
Trying to get him in a group home in Longview, but because of the unauthorized departures that he did all the time, he wasn't qualified for group home settings because their restrictive levels was not where Sean needed to be.
To help Sean get into that group home, on January 21st, the Corpus Christi State Supported Living Center took him off restrictive supervision. 9 days later, Sean goes missing.
Police are looking for 35-year-old Sean Yates. He's been missing since last week and is in need of his medication. He was last seen wearing a gray shirt, dark jeans, and white tennis shoes. He's 5'5" and weighs about 154 pounds. Police say he's not aggressive and tends to like flashing lights and police officers. If you have seen him, please call police.
Sean had climbed the fence at the Corpus Christi State Supported Living Center. It was about an hour before the staff realized that he was gone. Days passed, and the center is having no luck in finding him. Ashley then comes down to Corpus to conduct her own search.
I mean, when I was down there, I did see him send vans out looking for Sean, but I got discouraged with that because I can't look for my brother going 50 miles an hour down the road. You're not going to find Sean driving down the road like this. I mean, when he would run away from home here, when he was at home, we didn't drive. We hit them woods just like Sean was.
After 4 days of searching, Ashley was forced to return to Oar City on Friday, February 21st. The following day, Sean is found. He is dead. His body was floating in the Corpus Christi Bay.
Turns out the body found under the harbor bridge over the weekend is a man reported missing weeks ago.
Sean Yates was a resident at the Corpus Christi State Supported Living Center before he left without permission. Action 10's John Rapolo is live at the harbor bridge with more. John.
Well, you know, this past weekend, a very startling discovery by port workers. They first noticed a body floating in these waters behind me underneath the harbor bridge. Well, tonight, Corpus Christi police are identifying that body that washed ashore as 35-year-old Sean Yates. He'd been missing from the state school since early February. He was still clad in the clothes he was wearing when he went missing. Witnesses saying he appeared to have been in the water for some time. Now, the state school issuing a statement to us late today saying they are saddened by the news and are looking at supervision practices and are retraining staff so residents of the facility won't be allowed to wander off grounds.
Sean's cause of death is listed as accidental drowning by the Nueces County Medical Examiner, but Ashley thinks something far more sinister has happened to him.
My honest opinion of what happened, someone did this to him. His nose was broke. He has a laceration on top of his nose, and both cheekbones were broke.
So you think someone beat him up?
I do. But no one's ever going to walk up and say, hey, I did it.
Since Sean's death, an investigation by the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services determined that the staff at the Corpus Christi State Supported Living Center erred in moving Sean from restrictive supervision, and that neglect at the center eventually led to his death. Cecilia Cavuto is the spokesperson for the Texas Department of Aging and Disability Services, which oversees the 13 Texas State Supported Living Centers. She says the center's staff reduced Sean's supervision because they were trying to meet his needs.
First of all, by law, but also in the interest, in the best interest of each of our residents, we try to give them as much independence as possible. We try to put programming in place so that we are providing them with the least restrictive environment that we can provide them with while providing with their safety. The interdisciplinary team that was in charge of that particular resident's plan of care had met and determined that based on progress he had made in his programming, they felt he was ready for a less restrictive level of supervision.
And since Sean's death, Cavuto says new procedures are now in place.
We've done several things. First of all, we've retrained all of our staff as to what each level of supervision entails and the appropriateness of changing the levels of supervision. We've also added a third level of supervision, which is enhanced, and that's kind of in between one-to-one and routine.
News of Sean's death sent shockwaves through the community of special needs organizations in Texas that keep a close tab on the problems at the troubled state-supported living centers. Community Now, which advocates for independence from institutions like these state-supported living centers, released a statement saying the death of Sean raises questions about whether the Corpus Christi Center is fit to continue serving persons with disabilities. Joe Tate is the policy specialist for Community Now.
What happened to Sean Yates is something that can happen to really anyone that lives at this facility, any of the 13 facilities. It's something that's extremely unfortunate. It's something that is hard to really fathom, to wrap your mind around when you have that many staff working at that facility, and then you have someone that is able to really wander off of this, what's supposed to be secure, safe facility, is able to wander off and be gone for literally hours before he's even noticed that he's been gone. And I think it's just one symptom of a really overall bad system.
And the death of Sean Yates resurfaces one of the worst episodes in the history of the state-supported living centers, the so-called Fight Club, which happened at the Corpus Christi Living Center. For over a year at the center, staff members would entertain themselves by forcing the residents to fight each other. One staffer recorded over 100 fights on his cell phone. The fights are brutal, and the cries of the residents who are being victimized are bone-chilling. Ashley Yates says she only now very recently learned of the Corpus Christi Fight Club while investigating what happened to her brother. It turns out that Sean was living at the Corpus Christi Center at the time, and she thinks he may have been part of the abuse because of strange injuries that he had at the time.
His left ear. He got hit or something because his ear was like 10 times bigger than what it was supposed to be.
But Ashley said her family was never informed by the state about the Fight Club.
And no one ever told you, we had this problem here. We had these staff members that were taking individuals and forcing them to fight.
Right.
People were getting injured.
We were never told of that.
But he has had a wound that could have led you to believe, had you known that this could have been the result of
that Fight Club.
These days, Ashley says her family is still trying to cope with the loss of Sean, and she wants to remember him as the playful companion she had growing up in East Texas. And in her memories, Sean is wearing a big black cowboy hat.
He loved that cowboy hat. His George Strait hat. He loved George Strait. One song by George Strait, it's Give It All We've Got Tonight. That was Sean's favorite song. And then Jason Aldean See You When I See You. Those two songs of Sean is awesome.
Meanwhile, Texas is considering shutting down six of the state-supported living centers based on the recommendation of the Texas Sunset Commission. The commission is holding public hearings on the issue on June 24th and 25th, which is the day after what would have been Sean's 36th birthday. It's Sunday afternoon at Clay Boatwright's home in Plano. He has a 17-year-old daughter. She's up in her room, and two twin 14-year-old girls. Mia is out by the pool with her mother, and Paige is upstairs watching a DVD of Frozen. It's a typical Sunday afternoon, but the twins are not typical. Clay explains that they have severe intellectual disabilities and autism.
A lot of people don't know what that means. What does severe mean? Even though they're 14, they're nonverbal. They still need a lot of help going to the bathroom, bathing, things of that nature. And they're prone to some really, I use the word apocalyptic, level meltdowns. And you never quite know when that's going to occur.
For Clay and his wife Carol, caring for the twins, there are lots of surprises. For example, during our interview, Mia walks into the room without wearing any clothes.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I got my back.
That's okay.
Hang on. Sorry.
Yeah. So they're sorry, Clay.
No problem. Actually, it's funny that happened. I was literally about to say, if you see somebody naked running through the house, don't worry about it. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Welcome to my home. You take your own risks.
It's radio.
Over the years, Boatwright says he's experienced more than his share of autistic surprises and household disintegrations, one of which led to a moment of clarity.
I asked God, why did you do this? The Holy Spirit told me it was to get engaged and start helping people like Paige and Mia's level of development.
Boatwright got involved and eventually joined the board of the ARC of Texas, which advocates for persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And he was appointed by President Barack Obama to the President's Committee for People with Intellectual Disabilities. In Boatwright's involvement, he's gotten to know the complex system of care options available in Texas as well as anyone. And he's still not clear on what the future will hold for Paige and Mia when they become adults.
They'll probably live in either a community home type scenario or something that we need in Texas. Options which provide greater more services and the ability to serve people more than what you can do in a four-person community home, but are not so large that they look like a state institution.
A state institution means the Texas state-supported living centers. These are massive state-run facilities that provide 24/7 residential care for those with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Many of the residents also have other medical conditions that require specialized care. The large-scale institutional model has fallen out of favor with many, but Boatwright says it, as an option, is never far from his mind.
When you only have one option open to you, you take it. And I absolutely understand and respect and empathize with those parents 40 years ago, because if we were living then with my children, I absolutely guarantee you my children would be living in a state-supported living center today. I do not doubt that for one second, because I would have taken the only option available to me.
But the future of the state-supported living centers is uncertain, if not bleak. Recently, the Texas Sunset Commission issued a damning report about the centers. It calls for six of the centers to be closed. Texas has seen the number of residents at the 13 centers decline over the years, from more than 13,000 at one time to 3,650 today. But Texas has not closed a center since the 1990s.
Sunset took a really hard look at it. They calculated the issue. They found that we really needed to make some bold steps as a state, and we agree with them.
Joe Tate is a policy specialist for Community Now. It's a nonprofit that advocates for the disabled and encourages community living. He says the residents in the centers would be better off living in the community in smaller group homes. It would save money for the state, but more funding is still needed in the other areas.
As the state support living centers begin to downsize, if we don't redirect that money into bolstering the community, then we're going to be even further behind than we already are for caring for people.
The Sunset Commission also took into account the problems with the substandard quality of care and neglect at the state-supported living centers. In 2009, Texas was sued by the Department of Justice for the scandalous conditions at the centers, and the state quickly settled, agreeing to a baseline standard of care. In the agreement, DOJ inspectors would grade the centers, and for the next 5 years, not one living center passed an inspection. But even with these documented problems, the biggest supporters of the living centers are the families who have their loved ones living there. Susan Payne is the president of the Parents Association of the Retarded in Texas.
My sister has lived in a state-supported living center for 42 years. She lived at Corpus, Fort Worth, and now she lives at Denton. I've never seen any abuse. I've seen loving care. You know, our family members firmly believe that the lives of their loved ones depend on these services.
Payne says she's never seen an instance of abuse at the centers, and she's opposed to closing them down. And she says the way the DOJ's grading system works gives the false impression that the conditions are much worse than they actually are.
As a matter of fact, and the way this, the Department of Justice settlement agreement works is there's no middle ground. Either in each category, you are 100% in compliance or non-compliant. So there have been great strides in all of the areas in the state-supported living centers to become compliant.
Payne says the living centers have been graded too harshly, and many of the residents would not be better off if the centers were closed and if they were put into community homes. But Haley Turner, an advocate supervisor for Disability Rights Texas, maintains the living centers are substandard, even if the families can't see that.
We've put a ton of money into these facilities, and it appears years later that we've learned that it may not be fixable, that there may be institutional things happening that can never be fixed. No matter how hard people try, no matter how much money we dump into them, they just can't be fixed.
Haley says Texas could finally be ready to make big changes in the way that it treats the intellectually and developmentally disabled persons in the state. But there are still lots of questions about what form those changes will take.
I think there's a lot of uncertainty. I think everyone's read the Sunset Report, but we don't actually know what's going to happen. You know, there are recommendations, and we don't know. I think we don't know what's going to happen with DOJ. So you have all these things swirling, and I don't think any of us have an answer about what the future looks like.
According to the Sunset Commission, maintaining this large system of state-run facilities is costly, involving more than 13,900 employees and a budget of $662 million a year. If the legislature follows the Sunset Commission's recommendations, Texas could save $98 million by 2020 by closing the six facilities. But in the end, it'll be up to the legislature to make those decisions. In a statement, San Antonio Democrat State Senator Carlos Uresti said, "The Sunset staff report recommendation is a step in the right direction, but I believe it is premature to single out any specific location or number of living centers to close. To do what's best for some of our most vulnerable Texans, the 84th legislature will have to study this issue with the help of experts and advocates to ensure those Texans are properly cared for, no matter where they reside." That's it for this edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to the show with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. And you can also write on our show page at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters episodes to listen to. And you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.